My name's John, and I am an alcoholic.
Hey, John.
Everybody all right?
Yeah.
I don't know how I'm going to do that. That's weird. I'm not going to make it. Yeah. I drunk didn't know where to put his drink now. Is this open or closed? It's open meeting. We got some Al-Anons here. Where are they? Al-Anons here. Good. Yeah. They need to be here. I really love the Al-Anon program, and that's why I like open meetings. And I never used to go to Al-Anon. I never used to attend it. And every time I go to these AA conventions, they give you a little Al-Anon lunch ticket. Usually they have the Al-Anon speaker speak at lunch. And I never go to those. And then I was out in California one time, and I thought, well, I'm single. That's where the women are. So I go to this Al-Anon luncheon, and a friend of mine from Canada's talking. I've known her a long time, never heard her story. She's telling her story. She's talking about trying to stab her husband in the back. And how she was sharing that with her sponsor, and her sponsor shared with her how she tried to suffocate her husband. And I'm looking around in the room, and all the women go, yep. I'll stick with the alcoholic woman, thank you. That's just bizarre. I'm tickled to be here. I really am, and I want to thank Troy for inviting me to come, and the group's been great. We had a great dinner tonight. Got to go out to the prison yesterday, and I got to come home last night. That's a real thrill for me to leave. It's just been great. I was sharing out of the prison last night. At that AA convention I was out in California too. It was a big convention, and it was in a convention place, and it was attached right next to this big shopping mall next to the convention center. People out there shopping. And I'm out there on Saturday. I'm just people watching, not doing anything, just people watching, eating some frozen yogurt. And here came these two AAs from, they had their name badge on from the convention. Punk rockers. Okay, y'all seen those punk rockers? They got them here in Salt Lake now.
Yeah.
Guy's got a green spike going out this way, and a purple spike going straight up in the air, and a blue spike going out this way, and they're dressed, well, kind of the way I used to dress when I lived under the bridge, you know. And they're in love, boy and girl, just holding hands, walking down there, and I'm watching them, and they go up to this sunglass boutique next to where I'm sitting, and the guy goes in there, he puts on these sunglasses. And his girlfriend looks at him and she says, take those off. They make you look stupid. Just a distorted perception of reality, you know? And that's what's so distorted about alcoholics. We have no idea what goes on in here. We don't have a clue what goes on in here. But it always happens. Something always happens in an AA meeting. And we don't know how to explain it. It's just a paradox. You know, I mean, you think about it. You come. I love going to AA on Saturday. Saturday night, you go to AA. Can't you see that? All the Baptists, I should say down here, I should say all the Mormons, are out there talking about the drunks, and all the drunks are in here talking about God. You know? It's just a paradox. And then look at this. You get you're sober, and you come into AA, and they tell you, okay, now you're new. You got to change everything. You have to change your playmates, change your playgrounds, change your playpens. Just change all that. And then you get a sponsor. What's the first thing your sponsor says? Don't make any major changes the first year. You know? You're changed from the inside out this time. So how are you going to do that stuff? You know? And even the old-timers don't know. You ever been sitting in there in a meeting, newcomers meeting, and some newcomer's pouring his heart out. He's crying. And he says, a week ago tonight, I was in a hot tub, 5 naked women, all the booze I could drink, and some old timer chimes in and says, you never have to live like that again. And the newcomer says, thank God. that work, you know? That's insane how this thing works. You know, the book talks about how the day may come when they'll have a pill or something we can take that'll cure alcoholism. You know, it hasn't yet. Someday they may accomplish that. I want to tell you, if they come out with that pill, I ain't taking it. You want to drink like normal people?
No.
There ain't an alcoholic in this room that'll take that pill. I don't know anybody who wants to drink like a normal person. I've married one. It's embarrassing. It is. You want to drink like normal people? I'll tell you, we're driving around Dallas, Texas in August, hot, 100 degrees. She says, I feel like a beer. Can I get a beer? I said, yeah. I said, you want to go in and join or do you want to get one for the road? She said, no, we'll just get one. I'll drink it on the way going home. I feel like a beer. So I pull in this joint. I went in there. I bought a six-pack. I came out. She said, what are you doing? I said, you said you wanted a beer. She said, you bought six. I said, I don't know if they sell singles. I never bought a single. Do they sell singles? So she drinks her beer, and that was in August. Christmas time, we're having a Christmas party over at her place, and she's fixing, we're going to have a little dinner, a few people over, and I'm in the kitchen trying to help, and I noticed six of them. I open the door, and there are four bottles of beer on the bottom shelf. I said, honey, what are these? She says, well, that's my beer. So where'd you get it? She said, well, you got that in August when we were driving. She said, Daddy liked, he was up here watching football a couple Sundays ago, and likes, we ordered pizza. He likes to have a beer with his pizza, so he drank one. Is that okay? You want to drink like that? Beer ain't like wine. It doesn't get better with old age, you know? That's insane. Before I start dating her, I'm with a buddy of mine, Steve. He invited me to come over to his house. He wanted me to meet this girl. So I went over to their house on Sunday. They're going to barbecue around the pool. And I walked in there, and I noticed he's got one bucket of ice and one bottle of champagne in the bucket. And I said, Steve, what's this? He says, oh, that's our champagne. Yeah? I said, what are you going to do with it? And he says, well, the girls want to have mimosas. They're going to mix it with orange juice. I don't know why they do. And I said, how many bottles y'all got? He gets a funny look on his face, and he says, just the one. Why? I said, hell, it's your party, you know? So we barbecue. We're around the pool, getting ready to leave at 6 o'clock. Been there all afternoon at 6 o'clock, going home. And I noticed all three of them in the kitchen gathered around this bucket, fussing with this bucket. And I said, what are y'all doing? Steve looks up and says, oh, John, you don't know how to do this. How do we recork this bottle? I said, I don't have a clue how to recork that bottle. You ever have to recork a bottle in your life? Hell, I'm embarrassed. Three of them can't knock off one measly bottle of champagne. I drank a 12-pack of Diet Coke by myself. Unbelievable. You want to drink like that? I tell you, when I didn't drink. I grew up, okay, I am an adult child of non-alcoholics. And that's a bitch. I mean, I got nobody to blame. Nobody in my family drinks, okay? Dad doesn't drink, mom doesn't drink, brother don't drink, sis. I didn't drink. I grew up in a very normal environment, very middle-income America. You know, went to college like you're supposed to, never drank. Got married my senior year like you're supposed to, never drank. Got out and went in the insurance business here in Salt Lake. I was living here in Salt Lake. And I was scared. And I'd come in, I was sober. Hadn't never drank. And my secretary would give me these little phone messages. I said, what are these? These little pink pads. She said, those are your phone messages. I said, who from? I said, I don't know. So what do you think they want? She said, I guess they want to buy insurance. I think from me, you know? I mean, phones are scary to me. I hate phones. I like to have a phone, like to make phone calls, but man, that phone, ring, 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 ring. Who is it? You know? Hate those phones. But I ran into a guy named Stuart. Stuart drank. And so I started hanging out with Stuart in the bar. And I wasn't drinking. Just hanging out in the bar with Stuart. I loved it. I love drinking. I love the bar. I love everything about the bar. You can go down to the bar. You can be anything you want to be in the bar. I'm down at the bar, and I like to be a lot of stuff. You know? Sometimes we'd get women over the table, right? And they'd say, well, what do you do? Well, I do a lot of stuff when I'm drinking. You know, out in the bar. Sometimes I retire. So I've retired. 24-year-old retiree. Because you must have made a lot of money. Oh, yeah, I did. That's why I drive a Toyota. By the way, I'm doing that sober. I didn't start drinking yet. Finally, when my second child was born, Stuart came up and said, so we're going out drinking tonight? I said, great. He said, I'm buying. No, we're going to drink. We're going to party. We're going to celebrate. I said, great. So I had my first drunk. And went out to a place called the Winery. It's a private club. It used to be downtown across from the Salt Palace. You walked down these steps, walked in back there. Live band. Music going on. Dance. Women in there. I had my first drunk, and it was a great drunk. I don't know what I drank. Some people know what they drank. First, I don't know what I drank. It's dark. Dark drink. People bring over dark drink. Got a cherry in it. I drink it down. Next week, somebody buy another drink. It's dark, it's light. Light-colored drink. Got a twist around it. I drink it down. I'm having a ball, man. Somebody buys me a drink. It's got salt around it. It's okay. Drink it down. What do they buy? I'm drinking. Had a great drunk. Danced. I'm going to tell you, I can dance. A few drinks, I can dance. Danced that night. Danced with two lesbians. Okay. They were out there dancing together. And I thought, they probably want me to join them, you know? So I go out there, and then they left together. And there I was alone, you know? But no rejection. I'm just drunk. I learned something. When you're drunk, you're just drunk. No rejection, you're just drunk. Sat down, drank that next drink, said, I don't know how I learned to do that, but I just sat right down there, drank the next drink sitting in front of me, and had a great drunk. Got up the next morning, no hangover. Really felt pretty good. Called up Stuart, tell him, Stuart, I had a ball. You did. You flat got after it. I said, are you going to have a drink tonight? He said, I don't know. I haven't thought about it. I'm probably going to stop and have one. I said, what time? He said, well, I got to work till 3 o'clock. And I said, I'll meet you at 3:30. So I'm at 3:30, got drunk again. That's what I do. I never drank socially. I never got that cocktail or that glass of wine and visited, you know, and talked and sat down and went home. I never did that. I like to drink to get drunk. That's what I do. I get drunk. In fact, 3 weeks after that first drunk, I remember pulling up at the liquor store at 10 in the morning because they open at 10, so I'm on time. I go in there and I buy 3 little minis of a bottle of vodka because they told me you can't smell vodka. You know those little mini bottles you get on an airplane? They still serve those in the bars here because they couldn't free pour. They couldn't free pour back then. They had to serve mini bottles and they had to pour the whole mini bottle in there. Best drink in the world was in Salt Lake. You know, because a 2 ounce is a double. It was a great drink. So I buy 3 of those little mini bottles and I'd sit on my corner, crack those and suck. And that's hard. Drink those. That hole's only that big. In those You'll get a hernia sucking on those things. You really will, you know? And then I'd be okay to go to work. You know? And my life's changing immediately. I'm getting all kinds of trouble. And people are starting to tell me, you drink too much. You're out of control. You're an alcoholic. And I say, well, what's an alcoholic? How do you know you're an alcoholic? Now, don't get excited, John. It's a disease. Say, fine, let's go to the doctor. Let's get a proper diagnosis of this disease. No, we can't do that. We can't do that. Well, how do you know you're an alcoholic? Can't we go get some blood analysis? No, we can't do that. Well, how do you know you're an alcoholic? Can we go get like a CAT scan or MRI? No. Well, how do you know? Oh, yeah, here's the deal. Y'all want me to quit drinking. Okay, what happens 20 years from now? I find out I'm not alcoholic. I've blown 20 years, I could have been drinking. I'm not willing to take that kind of risk. So they give you that little, they give you that little test, 20 questions, right? The little test. I'm not sure I can take that test and I can pass it, non-alcoholic. I did it 3 times. Non-alcoholic. Because I lie. Okay? In fact, I am so good at lying, I don't know I'm lying. I'm that good at lying. A lot of people call that denial. I'm just lying. You know, but I don't know it. I think I'm telling the truth, you know? So they say, well, you drink too much. As soon as they told me I drank too much, I know I'm not alcoholic. Because I never drank too much in my life. In fact, there's not an alcoholic in this room that ever drank too much. It's impossible. See, I am an alcoholic not because I drank too much. But I'm an alcoholic because I couldn't drink enough. You ever drink enough? Oh, yeah, I can see somebody from this group. You go to the bar, you have a couple cocktails. Bartender says, you have another cocktail? Oh, golly. It's work day tomorrow. Don't want to be late. I think I've had enough. Never had enough. I mean, I go to the bar at noon. You ever do that? You start drinking at noon? It's now midnight. Been drinking 12 hours in the same bar. And I know I'm drunk. I know I'm talking about it. I said, oh, God. Stuart. God, I'm drunk. He says, me too. Can I buy another drink? Well, I hadn't had that. Well, if you can't drink enough, it's impossible to drink too much. See, normal drinkers, those normal drinkers, raise your hand, you know you are. Those normal drinkers can drink enough. And so occasionally, but not very often, they might drink too much. But if you're an alcoholic, like I'm an alcoholic, you can't drink enough. So when they tell me I drink too much, I know I'm not an alcoholic. Because that ain't my problem. In fact, when I drink, it's incredible. It's like a little bomb explodes inside. And it fills every empty pore I got. And I'm happy, joyous, and free. And you want me to quit? Why would you do that? You ain't going to. In fact, when I drink, you know those promises in this book? Promises in the book? Come after step 9. When I drink, those promises come true in my life. Every time without fail. I don't know about you, but after that very first drink, I begin to know a new freedom and a new happiness. And after 2 or 3 drinks, I don't know about you, but that fear of financial insecurity just kind of slips away. We don't need money. I got checks, you know. We're okay. After 4 or 5 drinks, I don't know about you, but I intuitively know how to handle situations in the bathroom. You know? Every single time. After 7 or 8 drinks, I don't know about you, but I really begin to comprehend serenity. You know? It's amazing how they work. And after a dozen drinks or so, I don't know about you, but it becomes real clear. Alcohol's doing for me what I can't do for myself. And you want me to quit. You're crazy. You ain't going to quit. You know? Now, here's the reality. I don't know any of that. When I first came into AA, they read me those promises, and I was totally unimpressed. I really was. Because what I really wanted as a promise is I wanted a job. Okay? Promise me a job and a girlfriend. You know, I need a car. Give me a car. I got to get my credit back. Those are promises I really wanted. You know? The truth is this. My whole life, I have demanded and insisted on having those promises as laid out in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if I don't have a program that will give me those promises without drinking, I'm going to go drink to get them. And if you're alcoholic, you're going to drink to get those promises because alcohol gave you the illusion of having those promises in your life. So if I'm not going to drink, I got to have a program that's going to give me those promises without drinking. Because you can go through every one of those promises, and that's what alcohol did for you. So I got to have those promises without drinking, or I'm going to go drink to get them. And the only way I know how to get those promises without drinking is working the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, as they don't come until after step 9. So you can come to all the meetings you want, you can pray all you want, but if you don't work the steps of AA, the clock is ticking. And the time will come when you will want those steps, those promises, and you'll go drink to get them. So you got to work the steps. Ain't no sure. I know any of that then. All I know is that, man, I ain't quitting. I ain't quitting. Now, I got a lot of problems. But alcohol ain't one of them. And finally, my brother told me, he said, you better straight up and fly right, because the folks think you're crazy. They're going to lock you up. They got the judge ready to sign the commitment papers. They're going to lock you up. And that's when I figured out my real problem. Okay, you know, Utah is at a high altitude. It is. You live here. You know it's high. It's at a high. Scientific fact. People who live at high altitudes for prolonged periods of time have thinner blood than people who live at low altitudes. Sure, I saw them on Discovery Channel. Okay? Well, I've been living in Utah my whole life. I got to have thin blood. Okay, you go out and party hard on thin blood, you have a problem. What I need to do is get to sea level. Thicken up my blood a little bit and I'll be okay. So I called a buddy of mine who lives in Seattle, that sea level, tell him about these problems I got. He said, man, get away from here. Come up here, take a year off, put your life back together. I said, well, I don't want to impose on you and Gail, your five kids. He said, no one positions. So I said, I'll be there Tuesday. You know, so I moved to Seattle. I'm living up in Seattle. I'm not doing anything. I'm just living up in Seattle. I'm doing a little drinking, working on thickening my blood. And when you're in that condition, the next logical thing you want to do, y'all know the next logical thing you want to do, hell, you're going to want to gamble. Okay? Best time to gamble is when you're unemployed. And so I started playing poker there. This is in the 70s. It was legal up there. And if you're hot shot and a big high flyer like me, you want to be where the real action is. And back then it was in Las Vegas. So I started running down to Nevada. And I finally thought, who am I kidding? I might as well just move to Nevada. That's lower than sea level. You get thick blood down there. So I moved down there, bounced around Las Vegas. It's hot. So I ended up in Reno, Tahoe area. And wasn't doing anything, just doing a little drinking. Playing a little poker, working on thickening up my blood. And Price, a buddy of mine, called me from Salt Lake here, invited me to come back that weekend. Shouldn't have gone. Doing real good in Reno. But I come back over to Salt Lake, and went out to a place called the One More Time Club. That's right over on 39th Street, 39th South. And went over to the One More Time Club, and I found her. She's sitting at the bar waiting. They're always sitting at the bar waiting. I'd go tonight, and she'd be sitting there waiting. And fell in love. So I want to take her out Saturday or Sunday. She couldn't go out Saturday or Sunday. I had to stay till Monday. Supposed to go home Sunday. Should have gone home Sunday. Stay till Monday. That Monday was October 6, 1981. And we go out. It was a bad date. Took this girl out. It was a terrible date. You know you got a bad date when you invite them to go to dinner, you know, and then they really want to eat. You know, because I never eat when I drink. You know, you don't start a fire. You put out a fire, you just started. So she's eating, I'm drinking. Okay, but I'm a gentleman, so every time I order me a whiskey or her a glass of wine. Well, the woman's busy eating, she ain't keeping up, her wine's stacking up, you know. So to keep from being embarrassed, I got to drink my whiskey and drink her wine, and it was just a bad day. And she finally said, take me home. She had no fun that night at all. So I took her home and dropped her off. It's 10:30, knocked on Price's door. That's where I was staying. He opened his door and he said, I thought you had a date. And I said, that damn woman. I went in there, I had bought a gallon of wine, because she said she liked wine, so I bought a gallon. And so we drank that wine all night, and I said, now tomorrow, Tuesday, October 7, 1981, we'll hit this town one more time, and then I'm out of here. This high altitude drink will get me in trouble. So we go out Tuesday, and we started at the Joker Club. Anybody remember the Joker Club? All the guys right there. It was a terrible, terrible topless joint. Down on 2nd South. Joker Club had... The Joker Club had one dancer in the whole place, and he had to be drunk to appreciate her. I mean, it was just sad. I tell you, this is the truth. I was telling this story in Dallas, Texas, about 20 years ago, in a treatment center place. It was called Help Is Possible. It was long term. It was a 9-month program, and this little girl was in there, came up after me, and she says, I used to dance at the Joker Club. I don't remember you at all. I'm saying. Crazy. So we left there. We drank there for a while. Then we left and we went over to see the fashion show at the Hilton. Hilton had a fashion show on Tuesday. Went to the fashion show. And then I blacked out. I black out a lot. Black out an awful lot. I'm black out. Some people say you black out every time you drink. Well, how do you know? Don't know. And blackouts can be real scary. There are two things that determine how scary a blackout is. The first factor is how long are you blacked out. The longer you're blacked out, the more scary they are. The second factor is what are you doing when you come out of your blackout? That'll add a lot to how scary it is. Okay? And I wasn't blacked out that long that night, but I came out of my blackout at the worst time. The worst time. And those of you that drink blackout know that the worst time to come out of a blackout is when you're talking to the cops. Because you don't have a clue where you are in the conversation. And you can't ask. You can't say, what are we doing? You can't say that, you know? So you kind of got to figure out, what are we talking about, you know? What have I already admitted to? What have you asked for? What have I given you? Without asking, you know? It's a very difficult time to come out of a blackout. Very difficult. And I finally figured out that one of my driver's license. Well, I didn't have a driver's license. They'd taken that 3 DWIs earlier, right? So I'm telling the cop, listen, I'm just going to go over there. That's where I'm going. In fact, I'll bet you that's where my driver's license is. And I'll bring it down to you tomorrow. I'll go over there tonight, and I'll bring it to you tomorrow. Thanks for stopping. They will not let me go. Finally, they ran my license plate, found out who it was, arrested me. I'm in lockup, and this time they're pissed. Okay? I can't even bond out. See, I knew the system, like y'all do. No matter what you're arrested for, you plead not guilty. Doesn't matter. Not guilty. And then you get, back then in the 70s, you got out on your OR. If it's just drunk stuff. You know, I think the biggest bond I ever posted was $50. And then they give you a ticket, and they set a court date, and then you get you an attorney. And then you start that postponing process, right? Postpone. Keep postponing that date. Don't want to go to court. Postpone. What you're doing is you're hoping the cop dies, okay? That's it. Just let the cop die one time. Mine never died. The attorney always said, okay, tomorrow we go to court. Be there at 10 o'clock, no more postponing. Court's tomorrow. And then you want to be sure when that happens to move. Because I never went to court, I just moved. You know? So I had all these failure to appear. So they said, no, we're not letting you out. You don't come back. You're going to court. So I can't get out, want to get out. Don't like lockup. Don't like nothing about lockup. Can't get out. Finally, a buddy of mine named Stan's not an alcoholic, didn't know anything about AA or Alcoholics Anonymous or alcoholism. But Stan had a lot of money, knew a lot of people. He comes down and sees me and says, okay, so I can get you out. But the only way they let you out is if they put you in my custody. And the only way I'm going to do that is if you promise me you go to treatment because you're sick. And I said, oh, Stan, bless you. You are so right. I don't know what it is, man. I go down to those bars, I start drinking, I get in all kinds of trouble, I get drunk. And I guess I'm an alcoholic and I need help. But I can't get any in here. He says, I'll get you out. So I got out of jail. And I had no intention of drinking. I didn't want to quit. I'm not going to quit. I'm just getting out of jail. And I'll do or say anything to get out of jail. So I stayed with Stan that night. Next day, he throws me the Yellow Pages. Says, you're going anywhere you can go, but you got to go to treatment. So I'm looking in the Yellow Pages. They had a lot of treatment centers back then. And I found this one treatment center. Call him up. Said, I need to come in for a little treatment. And the gal says, well, do you have any insurance? I said, no, I don't have any insurance, you know. Hadn't worked for 3.5 years, you know. I don't have any insurance. She said, well, it's like, this is 81. It's $12,000. I said, hell, I don't want to stay all year. You know? $12,000. I'm not that sick. Don't you have just a little treatment? Incredible. I called this one place, they wanted $18,000. I was so frustrated, I said, honey, listen, if I had $18,000, I wouldn't need your goddamn treatment. I solved any problem I had. I finally called this one place, and I said, I need to come for a little treatment. The guy said, okay. I said, well, how much is it? And she's a salesperson, so she says, well, when you check in here, you get room, board, and therapy. We have two kinds of therapies. We have individual therapy and we have group therapy, both conducted by one of our certified counselors, and it's $9 a day. And when you check in, we apply for food stamps. We get food stamps applied to the bill. And then if you work around here, we get some state aid. We pay $1.50 a day, but you could apply to the bill or you could get it in cash and buy cigarettes with it. You buy cigarettes for $1.35 a pack back then. And but if you applied it to the bill, it would be taken down to be about $5 a day. I couldn't believe it. I said, how long is your waiting list? See, those other places want 12, 18,000. They had 30 to 60 day waiting list just to get in. So I said, how long is your waiting list? She says, we have a bed for you tonight. I don't need to come tonight. She says, I think you got to come tonight. Okay, now I got a problem with this place. Think about that. They got bargain rates. $9 a day, room board therapy. They can't fill their beds. Okay, now they're high pressure me to get me come in. I'm a consumer here. I got my rights. I said, honey, listen, you make my reservation for Saturday. Or just forget the whole damn deal. You know? So she made it for Saturday, and I didn't drink. I stayed with Stan, hung out with Stan, and didn't drink. Saturday came, I drove down there, parked in the I sat in that parking lot of that place. It's in Provo. Sat in that parking lot all day. Watching go in and out, in and out. I want to see what kind of person, you know, goes to a $9 a day jitter joint, right? So I'm watching go in and out of there. Those guys going in there, alcoholics. I could tell looking at them. Look at that guy. Alcoholic. Nobody's going there. Look at that. He's an alcoholic. Then y'all don't look like alcoholics. Those guys going there look like alcoholics. You know? And I want an alcoholic, but it fit my budget, so I checked in. And nothing happened. Saturday, filled out a bunch of papers, got my room, it was a nice place. Sunday came out, my first exposure to Alcoholics Anonymous. Two guys from outside came in, chaired the meeting. They chaired the meeting, brought a meeting. There were 36 of us, all men, sat around in the lunchroom. And these two guys talked, and this was the thing they said. Because I'm watching everybody else. Seeing how everybody else acts. See, I'm trying to figure out how you do AA. I'm a real chameleon. I'm going to go someplace, I'm going to figure out who the hot shots, who do I need to talk to, what's going to happen here, how do I need to act, and then I'm going to blend. I'm just a chameleon. So I'm watching everybody else, how they do AA. And didn't listen to the thing those two guys said. They talked, and then it was open discussion. They opened it up, started down the rows. First guy introduced himself, said, my name's Joe B. I'm alcoholic. I'll pass. Second guy said, my name's Jim S. I'm alcoholic. I'll pass. I caught on real quick. What they do in AA, they give their first name, last initial, admit to the group they're alcoholics, and then pass. Okay, there's something magical. If you do that, it's just like magic. It'll just take that binoculars and off your shoulder, sit over there. That must be the deal. They had it written on the wall, admitted you were powerless over alcohol. So it got to me. I did it right. I said, my name's John A., and I'm an alcoholic. Nothing happened. Not a damn thing happened. I thought, well, obviously Alcoholics Anonymous must be for really simple-minded people. If that's what this is, you know. And obviously, I'm not alcoholic anyway, because nothing happened, you know. Now, it's a distorted perception that is of Alcoholics Anonymous. That was my perception of AA. It ain't for me. It's just for simple-minded people anyway. That's your deal. That was on Sunday. Monday, got to meet my counselor, Dale. Lovely lady. Talked to Dale for an hour. She wanted me to stay 2 months. Dale. I've been here all weekend, okay? I've been talking to these guys. They've told me they're alcoholics. I have no reason. They look like they probably are alcoholics, okay? I have no reason to doubt that they are. They've told me that program, how that first month you're going to break me down. You're going to get me to be open and honest. Let me save a month right there. Because I've always been open and honest in everything I do. And I got a great mind. It's a photographic memory. It's scary as hell. I remember everything I read. And I did real well in school. You can get a couple of manuscripts and say I did real well in school. And I'm too busy to stay 2 months. I can't stay. She said, you're busy? I said, yes, I'm busy. She looks through her papers and she says, now, where were you working? Well, I'm not working, but I'm busy. Isn't that true about alcoholics? Alcoholics are the most busy, unemployed people you ever want to meet in your life. They really are. Go to the meeting tomorrow, right? Go to the meeting tomorrow. Now, the guy's unemployed. He's got nothing to do but get to the meeting, and he's late. And you say, where have you been? Hell, I've been busy. I don't know where we are, but we're busy doing it, you know. We really are busy. So I said, Dale, so I'll tell you what, Dale. I'll give you 2 weeks. So you give me whatever material you're going to study during that two-month period. I'll read ahead. You can give me some pop quizzes if you want. Because 2 weeks, I'm out of here. I can't stay 2 months. She says, all that BS. I said, well, it better hurry with you. I said, damn right, you better hurry. See, because I'm not going to quit drinking. That's not what I'm doing there. I'm just doing treatment time. I figured treatment time is a lot better than jail time, right? Because I have no intention on that. And I don't tell anybody that. But that's what I'm doing. I'm just doing treatment time, which is a lot better than jail time. And she listens to me. She says, we better hurry. I said, good. We'll hurry. And that was on Tuesday. On Monday. Tuesday, I got to go to a group therapy, love group. Wednesday, the alcoholic education seminar. Showed a movie. I don't like movies about drug addiction, alcoholism. They're boring. Even today, they're boring. I find them. I don't watch them today. They're boring. But I'm sitting there, all my pride, all my ego, all my contempt, prepared not to like this movie. And the name of the movie they were showing was I'll Quit Tomorrow. And I'm watching this movie. Tore me apart. I couldn't believe it. I related to everything in that movie. I mean, it's like they made a movie of my life and they're showing it to the group. I mean, I did everything that guy, I dressed the way the guy dressed. I talked the way the guy talked. I acted the way the guy acted. I drank the way the guy drank. I related to everything in that movie. And I knew the gig was up. That was my moment of clarity as I'm watching that movie and I related to everything, that I knew the gig was up. My moment. What happened to me that night is I quit looking for that definition. What's an alcoholic? How do you know you're an alcoholic? See, I later found out in AA, we don't have a definition of an alcoholic. I couldn't define an alcoholic for you tonight. I don't know how to define that. What we have in Alcoholics Anonymous is a description. So you can't argue with the description. You can argue with the definition. That's why Webster's got 10 definitions for every word, right? Mm-hmm. But you can't argue with the description. The most powerful tool God has given Alcoholics Anonymous is our description of the alcoholic. Because it's that description, as the alcoholic relates to it, that seems to have the power to literally strip everything that separates the alcoholic from himself. And I could see me that night like I never see me as I related. I could see me that night like my mom saw me. I could see me that night like my ex-wife saw me. The difference was I could see me. And I knew the gig was up. My moment of clarity. Most powerful. Think how important that description is. Two-thirds of this book. Two-thirds of the big book. Alcoholics Anonymous says what? Descriptions in the stories. I mean, why did they put all those stories in there? Just to make a big book? No, it's that important. Because that description is related to it that seems to have that power to strip everything that separates the alcoholic from himself. And I knew the gig was up. And I wasn't happy about it. Sometimes you'll hear people talk from the podium how happy they were to know what their problem was and how at home they felt. That was not my experience. I was scared to death and pissed. I was angry. I cried all night. I mean, my whole life just changed. I mean, my God, I'm an alcoholic. Everything's changed. I got to go get like a job. You know? I'm an alcoholic. How am I going to meet people? How am I going to date? How am I going to function in a world that scares the hell out of me when I'm not drinking? I cried all night. I stayed there 6 weeks. Couldn't stay 2 months. Too busy. Stayed 2 months. But I stayed 6 weeks. And I got out of there and they said, now you need aftercare. Very important part of treatment is aftercare. So you're living in Reno. We're 800 miles from Reno. You can't come back here 3 times a week for aftercare. So we're going to prescribe you go to AA for your aftercare. And they gave me Intergroup's phone number. So I went back to Reno. I got back to the 2nd of December. I knew two things when I went back to Reno. I know I'm an alcoholic. I don't want to drink. Don't want to drink. I'm an alcoholic. Second thing I knew was AA's got nothing to offer. I mean, because come on. You go there. You give your first name, last initial, admit you're alcoholic, and then pass. Okay? Silly program. Silly program. I'm amazed how many of us still do that program. But I didn't want to drink. Did not want to drink. So first day I'm back in town, I call AA on the phone. Guy answered the phone. I said, my name is John A. I'm an alcoholic. He said, I'm Bruce. I'm an alcoholic. John, what can I do for you? I said, listen, I just got out of treatment over in Salt Lake City. I'm living here in Reno, Nevada, you know, and I wanted to call and report in. You know? I thought they had me on a computer, you know. If you don't check in, they put it on failure to appear notice. I don't know. So he said, I'm glad you're here. He said, you want to go to a meeting tonight? It was Thursday night. You want to go to a meeting? I said, yeah, I'll go to a meeting. You'll probably want to meet me. He said, well, I'm not going to go, but there's a men's stag, Hotel Riverside Casino, third floor Sierra room, starts at 8:30. I said, I don't know right where it is. I'll be there at 8:30. I'll meet him early so we can meet. He said, I'm not going. I said, well, you know, at least call the group. Tell them that John A. is coming to their meeting. He said, they'll be there. Don't worry about it. So I show up 20 after 8. First resentment, Alcoholics Anonymous. I call, made reservation. Guy did not make calm tell him I'm coming. Nobody there said, oh, you must be John A. Here's your, no, just some guy smoking cigarettes, drinking coffee, waiting for the meeting. I got my coffee, sat down. Pretty soon, a guy named Red got up to chair the meeting. Red looked like an alcoholic. He talked a long time, didn't listen to a thing Red said, because I'm busy watching how they do AA in Reno. Watching all the guys in Reno. They did it just like we did in treatment. Nobody paid a bit of attention to Red. They just drank coffee, smoked cigarettes. But they got, Red got through sharing. They started down the road, it was a discussion meeting. And these guys did not pass. They talked. They shared. And I have no idea what they're sharing. Nothing we talked about in treatment. In fact, these guys couldn't even introduce themselves right. Some of them did not give their last initial. They said, "My name's John, I'm an alcoholic." Guy didn't give his last initial. Supposed to give your last initial. Didn't give his last initial. Some of them gave their last name. They said, "My name is John Allred. I'm an alcoholic." I'm like, "Oh, what do you think anonymous means, man?" Giving his first line. I could look him up in the phone book. Imagine that. So I, you know what? If he's not willing to respect his anonymity, I will. I won't look at the guy. I won't look at you. Don't know who you are. This is anonymous. If I see you on the street, I will not say hi. You know? We're going to be anonymous in this program right now. These guys, they talked. I sat half through their meeting. Nobody mentioned we got an XY chromosome deficiency. I thought it became real clear to me. These guys have not been to treatment. You know? So it got to me. I thought, I can help. I'll help. And I had to write too. I said, "My name is John A. and I'm an alcoholic." And I qualified. I said, "Listen, guys, I just got a treatment over in Salt Lake City. And I want you to know I have the latest, most up-to-date medical and psychological information on the disease of alcoholism." My second resentment, red cup mouth, said, "Thank you, John. We're on the next guy." I thought, son of a bitch is jealous. I know stuff he doesn't know, you know? After me, some guys came up and shook my hand and said, "We hope you come back." I thought, "I'll be back. They need me down there." Now, Chuck Chamberlain used to always say, "Man, it's my teacher. Some people teach me what to do. Some people teach me what not to do." Okay? Please keep in mind, most of what I share is what not to do. Because okay? I've been still all wrong. I don't know where I was when they said 90 meetings in 90 days. It's not the way I did it. I did one meeting a week. Every Thursday, I got on my men's stack. Now, they will not let me share. But I keep going back. I figure, you know what? I'm a hell of a lot younger than Red. He's going to die. Then I get to share. Now, I tell you what happens when you go to one meeting a week. If you haven't tried that program. One meeting a week program. Here's what happened. One of the things they told me treatment, which is true. This is true. They said, "John, don't drink. Okay? Don't drink. If you just don't drink, you're going to feel better." And that's true. You will. But see, they didn't explain what that meant. If you don't drink, you will feel better. You're going to feel everything. You're going to feel all the pain, all the anger, all the resentment. You're going to feel that shit a whole lot better, you know? That's why I walk around Reno feeling better, going nuts. I mean, I drink when I feel better. I don't like that at all. So I'm down there going to my 1 minute, going nuts. I mean, sobriety's like watching paint dry. I mean, how good. It's Tuesday. We get to go to our men's stag meeting one more time, not share. So I'm down there. It's Tuesday. And it was Christmas Eve. And they said, "Okay, tomorrow's Christmas Day. Those of you got nowhere to go for Christmas, you can go to the Dryers Club. It's over on Well Street, Skid Row Clubhouse on Well Street in Reno. Still there. And it's free dinner. Al-Anon's going to fix it. It's free. You got nowhere to go." So I had nowhere to go. So I went over there on Christmas. Ate. It was good. So I'm sitting there. I'm not bothering anybody. I'm drinking a cup of coffee. Not bothering a soul. Old-timer spotted me. You know how they spot you? Their eyes kind of glaze over. And they start to salivate. Newcomer, you know? So here he comes. Why, I look at this guy. Not a cool. I like cool guys. This guy's not cool. He's an old guy. A fat old guy. Big nose, funny hair. Nothing cool about him at all. I thought, look at this guy coming over here to talk to me. Come on. Yeah, yeah. His name's Don. He tells me he's the coordinator of intergroup. I don't know what that is, but I thought, you know what? I'm glad they found something for you to do. So we're talking, and it became real clear. After talking to Don, just a minute, it became clear Don had not been to treatment. So I start telling about Don, all the stuff that I'm talking about in my home group. He gets a funny look on his face, and he says, do you want to go to a meeting with me tonight? And I said, well, hell, Don, it's Friday. I go Thursdays over to men's stat group. He says, we got a meeting every night in Reno. And in that short period of time, I've been to about half a dozen meetings. I'd heard something about spirituality. It's a spiritual program, right? And I'm, okay, it's a spiritual program. It's Christmas. I can go twice this week. Won't hurt. So Don comes by, gets me. We go out to State Hospital. We got a meeting at State Hospital, 7 o'clock on Friday night. We get out there, and I love it. They walk in, they give you a raffle ticket, free raffle ticket. They just give it to you when you walk in. And at the end of the meeting, they raffle off the big book, or as Bill sees it. Walked in the meeting. There were women in that meeting. First A meeting I've been to with women in the meeting. I didn't know that other men. You know? I thought it was a man's deal, you know? Women in the meeting. Immediately adopt that as my home group. I thought, why am I going there Saturday when I come here Friday, you know? My new home group, baby. I'll be back here next Friday. So they got, I don't know what they talked about because I'm busy praying, okay? Because although I have this great mind, I read real fast. Remember, I had forgot to get a big book. This is it, man. I'm winning the book. It's Christmas. This is God's gift to me on Christmas. I'm the only guy here without a book. I'm winning that book tonight. It's going to be a gift from God on Christmas. I'm going to get that. I prayed all me. But that book is mine. I want the book. In the meeting, God's got to give me that book. Nobody's been praying like I've been praying. I want the book. So then me and they had the raffle. Third resentment in Alcoholics Anonymous. Some little gray-haired lady, 25 years sober, wins my book. I thought, what's she doing winning my book? She got 5 months collecting dust. Can't even see to read woman's soul. Win my book. Before I can get out of there, that little lady comes up and gives me that book. That's where I got my big book. And that literally was the only Christmas present I got that year. And I took that book home that night. And I used to say that I took the book home that night and I read that book from cover to cover. So if you ever get hold of an old tape where I said that on the tape, please believe me that when I said that, hell, I believed it. You know? Then I got involved in a big book study. You wouldn't believe the chapters they got in that book. I got a chapter about chapter to the wives. Okay, well, I wasn't a wife, didn't have a wife, didn't want a wife. Okay, didn't read that chapter. They got a chapter in the book, chapter to the employer. Hell, I'm not an employee. Okay? Didn't read that chapter. They got a chapter in the book, we agnostics. Well, I'm not agnostic. I knew God real well. Didn't read that chapter. But I want to tell you, if you just read, you know, chapter 3 and chapter 5, you read that night, it won't take that long to do it. It really won't. So, next day, Don calls me up, takes me to another meeting. Every day, this guy's calling me on the phone, taking me to a meeting. And I don't really want to go. But he doesn't ask. He just says, pick up in 20 minutes. Click. Hang up the phone. I thought, how does he know I want to go? I'm not going to go. I'm not going to go. And I think, wait a minute, you know what? He's the only guy talking to me in AA. What's he going to talk about behind my back if I don't go? I got to go. So an interesting thing happened to me. Now, at that time, I didn't have a sponsor, hadn't worked any steps. The only change in my life is a meeting every single day. And a fascinating thing happened. I not only feel better, but I feel good. I hadn't felt those two things at the same time in years. And all of a sudden, sobriety started upon flesh and bones. And I started meeting other guys in AA, you know. And I started to get excited about going to these meetings. I started hanging out in intergroup, drinking coffee with Don during the day. And I was embarrassed, you know, about going to these. Don would come pick me up. I felt like a little kid getting in the car. And I'd sit there next to him, and we're driving in the car. And I'd say, Don, do you think we can go get ice cream tonight? We'll see. Yeah. So I'm down in intergroup. I'm feeling better. I'm feeling good. Things are going great. It's Tuesday. It's Thursday. I'm going to my men's stag meeting. It's New Year's Eve. Week later, New Year's Eve. I'm at the intergroup. Getting ready to go to my men's meeting New Year's Eve night, Thursday night. Phone ring, intergroup. I grab the phone. Young kid named Glenn. Glenn's 17 years old. Wants to know how to stay sober New Year's Eve. I said, why? I mean, damn, Glenn, you're 17. It's New Year's Eve. Nobody gets sober New Year's Eve. Call tomorrow. We're going to be open tomorrow. We'll be here in the morning. Don grabs that phone away from me, you know. It's when he passed the rule of central office. You must have 6 months of sobriety or more to answer the phone. Put up a big sign above the telephone. Must have 6 months to answer this phone. You know? So Don talked to him. I don't know what he said. Gave me his phone number. Not give me my phone number. But the next day, Don calls me and says, hey, Glenn stayed sober last night. Wants to go to a meeting. I thought, great. My 12-step call. First 12-step call. So Don comes and gets me. We go get Glenn. We're going to stay at hospital. Where I got my big book. We're driving in the car. Damn it, Don's just driving the car. He's not preparing Glenn for AA. I got to do it all. Just got to do it all. So I started to prepare Glenn. I started, Glenn, you're going to love this. You're going to get a raffle ticket. And you're going to get women. You get women your first meeting. I didn't know they were there for 2 months. You get women your first meeting. And by the way, I've been to several groups in Reno this week. And this group has the best women. Next Friday, you and I will come here without Don. This will be a great time for us to come here. And I say, you're going to get a raffle ticket. And hang on the raffle ticket because it doesn't mean they're going to raffle off the big book or as Bill says. And if God loves you, you win the book. Don and say, where Don just drove me. We get to the meeting, we walked in, we sat down. Then I got to meet, I don't know what they talked about because I'm busy praying for Glenn. I thought, come on, God, let Glenn win the book. Okay. If Glenn can win that book after I prepared him like this, boy, he's going to stay sober forever. And this will just be wonderful. And not that it really matters, but I would have 100% 12-step call success rate. I'll be able to write articles in the grapevine on how to have 100% 12-step call success rate. So I'm praying for Glenn. At the end of the meeting, we went to have the raffle off the big book. I won the book. Don looked at me and said, see how that works? I said, yeah. I signed it, gave it to Glenn. That's where Glenn got his book. Okay, Glenn's sober today because I gave him that book. Now, that little experience early in my sobriety taught me a lot. Okay, because it taught me how God works. Okay, God works through people. God works through people. See, whenever God works through people, it's always a win-win situation. Always at least two winners when God works. It's a win-win deal when God works. God works through people. See, I could have won the big book the first night. There'd been one winner, me. But that little old lady won by being able to share with me, and I won by being able to receive from her. Week later, two winners. I won by being able to share with Glenn, and Glenn won by being able to receive from me. God works through people. Okay? See, by working through people, he gets twice the result for the same effort. Very efficient God. God works with people. It's also a win-win deal. It also taught me how Alcoholics Anonymous works. Alcoholics Anonymous is one drunk sharing with another. And when that happens, guys, that's the magic to our program. When one alcoholic shares with another. It's a win-win deal. And it only happens when one alcoholic shares with another. So I've told that story in 26 years. I've been sober 1,000-plus times. It's the only story I got. And every time I tell that story, I remember that moment of clarity, when I know the gig is up. Okay? I'm sitting there watching that, and I know the gig is up. I'm convinced that all of us here that are sober and Alcoholics Anonymous tonight have had that moment of clarity. When you knew the gig was up. I'm equally convinced that those that come to AA for a while and leave and are out there drinking and dying tonight had that moment of clarity. What's the difference between those of us that are here sober and those of us that are left and out there drinking tonight? We both had that moment of clarity. What I think happens in Alcoholics Anonymous is really pretty simple. What we do in here is we keep that moment alive. We keep it alive. See, as I've shared my moment with you of what it was like and what happened, what have you thought about? And when I'm on that side of the podium, one of y'all is up here and you're sharing your moment of what it was like and what happened. By the way, isn't this the perfect program for people whose root problem is they're selfish, self-centered? Because when you're up here and you're remembering your moment, you're keeping your moment alive. I'm so self-centered, what am I thinking about? Screw your deal, I did that, you know. Thinking about my moment, right? We keep that moment alive, and nowhere can you keep that moment alive but when one alcoholic shares with another. You can't keep that moment alive by sharing with your therapist. Your therapist doesn't need to hear it. My life depends on hearing about your moment so that my moment stays alive. You know? You can't keep your moment alive by sharing with your doctor. Your doctor doesn't need to hear it. My life depends on hearing about yours so that my moment stays alive. It only happens when one alcoholic shares another because that makes it a win-win deal. And the magic is that moment of clarity, normally, not all the time, but most of the time, happens before you get to AA. By the time you show up here, we assume you've had that. That's God's gift. And the proof of that statement is your last drink. I'm willing to bet a whole lot of money that when you had your last drink and you set your drink down, you had no idea that was your last drink. I didn't. I mean, if I did, I would have done it different. You know? What happened? What made that your last drink? It's called divine intervention. That's God's gift. Your last drink's the most important drink you ever had in your life. Because that's what happened right after that, is that moment of clarity that brought you to AA. What it was like and what happened. That's what we do in here. And we keep that moment alive. What happens when you lose your moment? You take drunk. You know? So we keep that moment alive. It only happens when one alcoholic shares with another. And we're out of time, but I want you to know, my trip in Alcoholics Anonymous has been just incredible. I've loved every minute. It has not been easy. It has not been an easy journey. You know? And they warn us. For some reason, I thought, well, if you come into AA and you get sober, you don't drink, you're not going to have any more problems or pain. Now, nobody ever told me that. Okay? In fact, they warn us. But they're tricky about it. You know, they say, in our adventures, before and after. It means after you get sober, you're going to have some adventures. You know? And I would love sometime to tell you about those adventures. Because that's what the program is all about. In fact, I'll tell you, I'll close with this really quick little story. About a young sponsor, he's out with his sponsor, Christmas time, his first Christmas sober. They went Christmas shopping, he had a little job, made some money, bought some Christmas gifts, and they stopped at a little restaurant, a little coffee shop, and they had a cup of coffee, and were talking about how great it was that God had given him this job. He was sober, and he bought his Christmas gifts for the kids, and then they left, and they got in the car, driving down the road, and they forgot their gifts. Left them sitting at the coffee shop. And the little guy was just petrified. And they spun around, they went back to the coffee shop, And they went in and they said, "Oh, yeah, we got your gifts. They're right here." And they gave him the gifts back. And they got in the car. And the little young alcoholic sponsor, he said, "Isn't it great? Doesn't this program work? That just proves this program works." And the sponsor said, "No, that didn't prove the program works. If the gifts hadn't have been there, that's when the program would have worked." And that's what we come up on every day. Little things every day where the program's going to work. And it's not when things work out. It's when things don't work out. Whether it be relationships or money or jobs or employment. That's when the program works. And with this group, I'm just in love with your group. I love it. I think you've got a great group here. It's the first, you know, I grew up here. I still come back here. My folks lived here. My mom just died a little bit ago in May. But my brother still lives here. So I still come back to Texas or to Utah. I live in Texas, and I've been to a lot of groups here, and I love this. I don't know where y'all have been hiding, but I haven't found you till now, because I was totally unimpressed with some of the places I've been. And I love this. I love what you're doing here, and what you're going to find is that in a year you're going to need twice as much space as you got now. You've outgrown this place, and that's fine because it's a program of attraction, you know? And the more attractive the group is and people getting well, and that happens by sponsorship, the faster the group grows, you know? And it's just wonderful. I appreciate y'all letting me come and share. I love you. Thank you very much.